And we will actually post the call on the UUCEF.org website.
You are now muted.
To review it again, or if you have other committee members you think would benefit from it, you can refer them to it. Next thing is I'm going to mute all of your lines while we do the presentation and then open them up later for questions. So let me just do that now.
All guests have been muted. You can unmute your line by pressing star 6.
Okay, so the lines are all muted now, although I should have David and Lucia on the line. Are you guys?
I am.
Lucia? Yes, and I am here as well.
Great, okay. So we circulated a presentation to anybody who indicated that they would be on the call. But if perhaps you did not register or you didn't get it, you can get the presentation simply by going to UUCEF.org. So that stands for UU Common Endowment Fund, UUCEF.org. And over on the right-hand side, if you go about a third of the way down the page, you'll see a link on the right side. You'll see a link that says View November Investor Call Materials. And you can open that up, and that's what we will be talking from. I'm just looking for my own materials here. So the agenda today, well, the speakers today will be myself, Tim Brennan, the Treasurer and Chief Financial Officer of the Association, Lucia Santini, who is the Chair of our Investment Committee, and David Stewart, who chairs the Socially Responsible Investing Committee and also serves on the Investment Committee. He has a dual role. So today we're going to talk about the October performance review, outlook and expectations. We'll talk about the recent Investment Committee meeting and outcomes from that. And then we'll talk also about the conversion to the LLC. And I'm going to do that part, and then we will also then open things up to questions and answers. So I think what I'm going to do actually is to start myself and talk about the LLC. So we've talked about this many times, but it is now underway. You all should have received a new subscription agreement, an operating agreement. They went out on October 9th. Everybody should be reviewing those, executing those documents, and getting them back to us. If you have questions, you can contact Susan Helbert or me, and that information is on those packets that got sent out. These are not materially different from anything you've had in the past. None of the basic terms of the fund are changing, but the legal structure of the fund is changing to an separate limited liability company. And so we need to have documentation from all of the participants in the fund that indicate that. So please get your signed subscription agreements back. We said they were due November 30th, which is Monday. If you have difficulty or need a little bit of extra time, to get to some committee members or your president or whatever, let us know. Please get back to us. We'll work with you on that. The target is to convert the entire fund into the LLC on January 4th, which is the first business day of 2016. And if we get to the point where people have not responded, we're going to return their asset balances to them so that they can make an election on how to invest those. But of course, you know, we're really hoping everybody comes on the ride and moves into the new fund. So I think that's it on that. If you have questions about that, we can deal with those after we hear from Lucia and David. So with that, let me turn it over to Lucia. Lucia, could you talk to us about fund performance and the recent investment committee meeting?
Yes, sure. And the investment committee met just last week, and well-timed so that we were able to review October performance instead of September performance. The year has been a fairly volatile one for most of the last 6 months, and as you can see from the materials that Tim and Susan circulated, the results through October 31 on a year-to-date basis are pretty much flat year-to-date, whereas through September, because of global market activity, were more in the red. The market's volatility is likely to continue, we expect, based on the combination of economic uncertainty coming out of the Far East, the continuing uncertainty about the recovery in Europe as a result of quantitative easing. While there are many positive signs, it's still in the early stages, and so markets don't like uncertainty, and certainly the U.S. domestic market, because it has appreciated so strongly in recent years, is particularly susceptible to downdrafts. But I think we've seen that most equity markets are moving together these days, and so while the direction was down in September, back up in October, and bringing the year-to-date to just about flat. Is it very difficult, Tim, for you to allow people to ask questions? Because I'm really happy to entertain questions that people might have specifically about the strategy or about components of the return, rather than my prattling on and not necessarily addressing whatever is on top of people's minds.
Sure. So first of all, let me just say that
it just comes out completely blank.
The performance page in the little booklet is
Could
kind
be
of
that
hard
my
to
mind
read, so we
blank.
Actually posted and sent you the performance report as a separate document. I would encourage you to look at that. That's the 2015-10 UUA Flash PDF. I think that's a much clearer document. So if I actually have it set up so that people can unmute themselves by hitting *6. So if you have a question, press *6. And then please, when you're done with your question, hit *6 again to mute your phone again. So
and
if
I would,
anybody has a question,
and I was
they
just
can jump
say,
right in.
And I was just going to say, I would love it if people would identify themselves when they ask a question. That would be great.
So it's a shy group today. Do you want to continue?
So I guess, you know, the only additional comments that I would make are that the managers are largely performing in line with their strategies and or styles, and some of the styles are designed to outperform on the upside, and some to outperform on the downside, and so we do continuously monitor manager performance. But I think the more important thing that the committee does is to focus on strategic asset allocation and asset classes to ensure that we are including the right asset classes, that we have proportions that are appropriate for the endowment, And so if there aren't any specific questions about recent investment performance, I think it might be most productive to move to the November 18th Investment Committee review.
Yeah, I mean, Lucia, if I could just jump in. I think the one thing that came across to me from our investment consultants, NEPC, is that we've been in a period for quite some time of very low volatility, and that's a time when, you know, very simple asset classes tend to do well. I mean, basically, you know, your S&P 500 is doing great, and so a portfolio that's highly diversified like ours will tend to lag in an environment like that. Whereas we're moving into a period, and I think it's expected to continue for a while, of pretty high volatility, and that's a situation where active managers and diversified portfolios have a better chance of delivering their value and outperforming. So I think that's kind of the where we're looking at. It is a little unsettling, but I think the diversification of the portfolio really does help to address that.
Right, that's a good point. And I guess the other thing to emphasize in that regard is that both investment managers and strategies are best considered over a full market cycle. And although it's been nearly 7 years that the U.S. Domestic market has been outperforming, it hasn't been a full market cycle, and it's been a fairly extended market cycle, in large part as a result of artificially low interest rates, and indeed the volatility that that has been coming to an end has been coming to an end as a result of the necessary discussion by the Fed that is preceding their increasing interest rates. And increasing interest rates, what will be the pace of it, what will be the impact of it, that too adds to uncertainty. And so indeed, over a full market cycle, we do expect that a well-diversified portfolio will meet or exceed the expectations that we had set for it. Nevertheless, there will always be an asset class or asset classes that will outperform over some period of time any strategy. So our goal certainly isn't to outperform whatever the best performing asset classes in any particular market environment, because that simply is not a realistic investment objective for anyone to set.
I think I heard somebody with a question.
This is Glenn Solomon. Lucia, are you going to talk about some more, that is, about the outlook and strategy for the future based on what you discussed about the global market uncertainty and so forth?
Well, so yes, but in the context, I was intending to discuss it really in the context of the investment committee discussion about investment policy and asset allocation, because the long-term outlook, is certainly what we're managing to. The short-term outlook is one of expected volatility and downside risk to both equity and fixed income securities, because, as I just stated, the pace of the increase in interest rates, first of all, is unknown, although the Fed continues to signal that it will be gradual. No one knows exactly what is meant by that, and no one really knows how that will impact our economic growth, and of the developed nations, our economic growth is among the strongest, and so it remains to be seen how it will play out both domestically and in terms of the U.S. dollar, for example, which has been quite strong. Will it cause the dollar to weaken? Will that benefit our economy, and what impact will that have on the rest of the developed world, which has to some degree benefited by having more competitive currencies than ours. So the near-term outlook is one of heightened volatility because of these near-term risks from increasing interest rates. The long-term outlook is positive in that we have an expectation of continued global economic growth, continuing growth here, and recovering in Europe. So longer term, it's a positive outlook, but returns are likely to be uneven, and also likely to be lower than they've been, certainly in recent years, where we have had quite a number of years of back-to-back double-digit increases, and that's not likely to happen.
Thank you.
Kevin Schuyler here with a question.
Go ahead.
Hi, thank you.
Just thinking about the asset allocation, I wonder if at your meeting, either the most recent one or at another one, you've had the opportunity to talk to the consultants about the GTAA composite and the hedge fund composite. And I guess I'm just thinking that in my own mind, within the context of your asset allocation, that those would be kind of diversifying strategies that hopefully would not experience the kind of decline that they did experience, let's say, over the last year. It seems as if whatever managers we've selected for those particular groups aren't really, on the surface, it would appear they're not giving us the kind of diversifying the kind of diversification that we might want from that part of the portfolio. I'm just wondering if that was a discussion item with the consultants and what their thoughts were on that.
Well, I'll start, and then Tim and David, you're welcome to join in. Yes, both of those allocations have been a fairly steady topic of conversation, and indeed we have looked at a number of alternatives in the hedge fund space. I think in significant part because the hedge fund of funds that we have has relatively high fees, and so it occurs to us that it would be best to successfully fill that bucket if we can with an offering that offers such diversification in a more direct way. It will have a different risk profile. A hedge fund of funds does provide lower volatility, but we have acknowledged that we would be accepting of higher volatility with potential for higher returns and considerably lower fees. So that is something that the committee has asked for and is continuing to look for. We haven't yet seen a replacement candidate that the committee has felt we were ready to replace Entrust. But that is it is clearly on the list, and also there has been much discussion about the GTAA and the role that that plays. And the consultant does continue to emphasize that you know, that we haven't yet been in the environment where that manager is expected to have the strongest relative performance, and so that is acknowledged, and that, you know, in many ways that allocation really sort of exacerbated our strategic allocation to international developed markets as well as emerging markets, and so the role that GTAA plays in the portfolio continues to be discussed, and I think time has been spent and will continue to be spent resolving that, and I can go into that a little bit more, but I'd like either Tim or David or both to, you know, jump in and throw out any thoughts you have about both those topics.
Yeah, this is Tim. So just a couple specific comments on the on these managers. GMO is a you know, sort of a contrarian manager, and they tend to shine in down markets. So it's really in the portfolio as downside protection, and as Lucia just said, they really haven't had that opportunity. But I think, you know, that it still serves a good place in the portfolio. You know, Bridgewater has kind of done its job over the years, especially if you go out, you know, 5, 7, 10 years. It has performed pretty well. We are reviewing both of those at the investment committee level. In the hedge fund space, I'd just like to say CVN is it's grouped here. But it's not really a hedge fund, and it doesn't do any hedging. It's just long only. They buy a very small number of stocks in Europe and take very large positions. Their whole strategy is around corporate governance. They look for companies that have poor corporate governance practices, buy a very large position in the company, get a position or two on the board, and then attempt to bring about significant improvements and capture value that way. So it really, even though it's such a small number of securities, it's going to fluctuate wildly, but it's really a long-term strategy. So we're pretty happy.
And that's
with
a very
them.
New investment, relatively.
It's very new, yes.
Compared
yeah.
to Entrust, which has been in the portfolio for it's close to 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah, I think not quite, but yes, yeah, certainly. I think it's in my 10 years, so 7 or 8 years, something like that. But it is this whole area is under active review by the committee. David, did you want to add anything?
Not too much, just to say that Bridgewater is heavily essentially exposed to commodities and treasuries and that sort of thing, and it's another area where we're taking a look. So,
but excellent question.
I've got a follow-up question, but I'll see if others have a question.
And which congregation are you from?
Well, we just joined. We're with the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Great.
Welcome.
And we're delighted to be part of the group and really appreciate all the efforts that all three of you make to help us do what would be hard to do on our own. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thanks for joining at such an exciting time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you
well,
what.
Why don't you go ahead with your other question?
It makes our investment committee meetings easier, probably yours harder. So. maybe I'll just make a couple of comments to that might be, you know, just something that you can take to your conversation with your consultants. So one on GMO, I guess my impression from the comment that was made, and then my impression generally of that particular product is that it does have a heavy emerging markets emphasis. And I guess I would just think relative to other times in history, having a pretty large emerging markets emphasis might not necessarily give the same kind of downside protection that maybe that product has offered historically. So just kind of a comment to for you know, just to park away. The second on
Can I just jump in on that for quickly?
Yeah.
This is actually a strategy that gives them a very wide berth as far as where they want to allocate their assets. So they're not locked into any kind of fixed allocation to one asset class or another. And in fact, we were looking at that at the last meeting, and it's the changes from one period to another are quite dramatic.
So that said, the committee is cognizant that they have had that, and that's why in my remarks I indicated that they had magnified our strategic allocations to international and emerging markets. So we are aware of that that structural issue.
And
it can be a benefit as well as an issue, but certainly right now you're raising it and it has been an issue.
Yeah, so right now I'm looking at it, and it appears to me that the current allocation to emerging is about 5%. That's not that much.
No, that's not that much at all. Okay. So I guess
I have a question.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Dorothy Feely from Philadelphia. In the last two conference calls, Lucia went through each of the funds, telling how they were doing and what the prospects were. Also in February indicated there were two funds you were going to divest. Is Lucia going to do that this time?
So, no, I was not, because I really wanted for there to be, you know, first of all, I did it, that was my first call, and I wasn't sure, you know, when people heard about everyone last, so I thought it would be good to step through them, but I'm not sure, you know, that's why I wanted to open up to questions, because I didn't want to use up all the time just marching through the numbers, because that's why I sort of covered it with the broad brush, that all of the managers are performing relatively consistently with our expectations based on their strategies, and so if you have specific questions, I am happy to answer them. But I did kind of want to leave a little bit more time, since the investment committee was was focused on a fairly holistic analysis of the statement of beliefs that guide the Common Endowment Fund, and the role that the Common Endowment Fund plays in the health of the UUA and the health of congregations, to the best of our knowledge, and implications that may have for our investment policy and where where we were thinking at least from a UUA perspective any implications, and to get feedback, because this is an ideal opportunity for the investment committee to have an opportunity to hear from the congregations what role this plays, so I can just throw out, the Common Endowment Fund provides between 20% and 25% of the operating budget for the UUA. So, that's not enormous, but it is quite significant. So, I would love to have more time to talk with you all and get your input there, but I am very happy to answer specific questions you have about any of the performance.
Have you divested of any funds since the February conference call, and have you added any funds?
So, Tim, we did reduce I lose track of the when.
So I'm not entirely sure what your question is. Are you talking about have we hired or disposed of managers, or are you talking about the whole fossil fuel thing?
Well, in February there were two funds that were not doing well at all, and you indicated you were going to divest them.
Yeah, I mean, we did get rid of one of the GTAA Wellington, but and that's probably about, yeah, so that you're talking about since February. So,
right.
Yes, so we did get rid of the Wellington GTAA fund. We were not happy with them.
And previously we had replaced the bond manager.
Yeah, so I think that's also since February. So we had been with this in this PIMCO fixed income fund for a few years, not that long. PIMCO ran into some trouble. You know, Bill Gross left. There was some turmoil. They weren't doing that bad, but we thought it was a good opportunity to reconsider that. And so we hired actually two new fixed income managers, Breckenridge and IRM. Breckenridge is a has a sustainability strategy and includes some green bonds and infrastructure bonds and that sort of thing, and they've been performing well. And then IRM has a strategy that's similar to PIMCO in that it's they do negative screening, so they leave out, tobacco, weapons, gambling, that sort of thing, to appeal primarily to faith-based investors.
And they're both,
I think those
what
are the
we would
two
consider core, yes, core bond managers, as
exactly,
opposed to anything more esoteric like high yield or distressed debt or international bonds.
Well, you've answered my question. Thank you.
Great. Okay, and then you had we not quite treated the second part of...
Well, I was just going to make a comment that I just want, I guess one area that would be interesting to hear their consultant's view on at some point would be, while Bridgewater seems to have, done well for the organization, over the long term, I just wonder about having almost a 10% position with a single manager in that space, and if you are going to potentially be looking to make more direct commitments rather than fund of funds like Entrust, I just wonder if having a little bit more diversification, even if even if the fund has a great name and a great reputation, might be something to think about with the consultant.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you want to comment on that, Lucia, but...
You jump right in. I've been talking quite a bit.
That's okay. That is, I think maybe you had a bug planted in the investment committee meeting, because that is what we're talking about, going to a more direct hedge fund strategy to eliminate that extra layer of fees, and certainly some of these funds with the larger allocations would be prime candidates for sourcing that. Lucia, is there anything else you want to say about the investment committee meeting? I mean, we didn't really make decisions, but give some kind of indication of what we were talking about and where we might be going.
Yeah, so what we were talking about generally was over the long term to increase the asset allocation to equities and to reduce the asset allocation to risk parity. And I think that the Bridgewater, as he said, that's one of the code words for Bridgewater is risk parity. So that's why Tim said perhaps you were eavesdropping on our meeting. The increased allocation to equities, we haven't made a commitment, but will be looking at global developed markets as a category, along with international and domestic. But and also we recognize that we are absent an allocation in the domestic small SMID value segment, and so we're interested to look at possibilities there. It's an interesting asset class. So all of it really being driven by the discussion about the role that the endowment plays in the association's health and the structure of the endowment funds, the liquidity, and therefore the ability to take a little bit more risk in the form of volatility in the short term for a better long-term expected return. But I would be very interested to hear from anyone who's on the call who wishes to comment on either the role that their investment in the Common Endowment Fund plays in the ongoing operation of the organization, and or what percentage of the operating budget might be funded by whatever income stream you're collecting from your investment in the Common Endowment Fund. I think it would be helpful for us to have some more anecdotal evidence. If any of you would like to jump in.
Have I unmuted? This is Joan Cuddy.
Yes, you have, Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Okay.
Good job.
I had a question, San Diego. I had some questions related to percentages of the portfolio asset allocation. As I recall, you were going to decrease fixed income. It's still slightly above the 10%. Page one. It's like 11.2% currently versus the 10%.
Mm-hmm.
If I got the right page. And you're always under, it seems to me, my favorite category, that 1% community development. So even though the market, you know, the grand total went down, it's
we're pretty darn close, Joan, pretty darn close. And there are actually two commitments that are not in there because we haven't funded them yet. So we're pretty close on the community investments. So
$96,000 short, according to this, October.
Right, and there are two commitments we've made which are not funded, so we need to keep a little dry powder for that.
And I always ask for publicity for that allocation in UU Weekly article someday or UU World Magazine. And my other question had to do with private markets opportunistic, which is a new category, as I recall. And there's no 1 month, performance. So do they just not report monthly, or they didn't come in on time, or?
Yeah, it's. Well, I don't know. Did you want to say anything about this, Lucia?
I think it's that because I think that there's a much longer lag that occurs in private markets because they are private markets, and so there is no readily available pricing source.
That makes sense.
And in this day and age, there's an expectation that whatever management places on something as prices will then have some overlay or review. And so my expectation, without having actually delved into what is the what is the lag that we have in our private market investments, I'm guessing that that it's at least 30 days before you get publishable pricing, and so they're estimates, and so they just didn't include it in the flash because it wasn't readily available.
Yeah, the way these private markets work, so that remember that what they're doing is they're taking capital and investing it directly into companies that are not traded, so there's no market to
real
try to
estate
figure out
properties and yeah.
Yeah, and so so they tend to do their what they call calculating a NAV or a net asset value on a quarterly basis, and they do that by just estimating the value of these companies based on their balance sheet or their revenue growth, comparing it to other similar companies, and they come up with a valuation. So when we do have numbers, those are the numbers that get put in the report. The real number, of course, is when it, after 5 or 7 years, they turn around and sell the asset, and then you know what it's worth, and then you have a real number. So even these interim numbers are pretty much estimates. So in the case of Brockton,
because there's no liquidity,
right? That's a new fund, and we just put the first dollars into that in June. So we're probably not going to see, a valuation. We'll probably get a valuation for 9/30 sometime in the near future. But that's a brand new fund, and we're brand new into it. It won't be funded probably for another year or two. Because you make a commitment, and then they make calls over time. So I think our commitment was about $5 million. So we're only about 40% of the way into that fund.
And so Joan, that's sort of closing the loop. So funding for these things as the capital calls come in will be sourced from the core bonds and the strategic alpha where we're overweighted. So that was identified.
That's right.
As a source.
This is Arnold Bradford. My observation is even when you get an estimate on private equity, you need to take it with a grain of salt. As Tim said, the real value is established upon sale. Until then, you need to deal with skepticism as to what is reported.
Exactly. They're only just estimates built off of quantitative models, and they're not liquid investments, so that there is no certainty about any price on any private equity investment.
So where does the custom benchmark come from?
Because there's a lot of these private equity deals in the universe.
But your point is well taken, Joan, because what they're doing is compiling all of these estimates and creating a benchmark out of it. The point is not that they're fiction, but that the real value is when these properties or companies are sold into the marketplace or sold to a larger company. That's when you get the real number. So, but there is a real market for these smaller companies, and they do have valuation methods. So that what the benchmark is a compilation of the valuation or NAVs of all the different funds in the space.
And
but
I would say that it's probably the least valuable composite. it's probably maybe the hedge fund composite is equally an agglomeration of disparate strategies that perform very differently from one another and are managed very differently from one another. So it really is a consultant creation, because everything is about measurement. But the value from that composite, in my opinion, is minimal.
Thank you.
if any?
This is Arnold Bradford. One other thing, I'm struck in reviewing the composite for October 31 in the domestic equity. In the short term, how well Sands has done and how unwell Pier Capital has done. Do you want to comment on the short-term performance of Sands and Pier Capital?
Well, so Sands is, you know, is a large cap growth manager, and that really has been one of the best spaces of in the domestic market. And I would say that their track record overall, you know, I think I alluded in the beginning that some managers outperform on the upside and others on the downside, and they are definitely an upside performer. And so what we're seeing, you know, is fairly consistent from them. I guess Pier is more a smaller cap, which that part of the market has performed very differently, particularly recently. I would say I'm not as familiar with them as I am with Sands, but I think that it's largely the short-term difference between the small-cap market and the large-cap market.
Yeah, and I think they also they share one thing in common, which is these are both high conviction portfolios. That is, it's a relatively small number of stocks that they own, and so they're not going to track the market. They have a high degree of conviction in the companies they own, and it's going to swing around the benchmark depending on what's happening with those companies.
Thank you. That really does, I think, emphasize the reason that they vary so much from their indexes.
So the last thing I wanted to say about this asset allocation review that the committee's been going through, and no decisions will be made in the short term, but probably by the next meeting, is that you shouldn't expect any big swings. I think the committee feels pretty good about its overall strategy, its overall asset allocation mix. They're, you know, working with the consultants who are able to model all this stuff and put through different kinds of assumptions. You may see some trimming here, some adding there, to try and better position the portfolio for what we anticipate in the markets over the next few years. But there's not going to be any dramatic change in overall strategy. And what you read over and over is that studies show that 90% of your performance is based on asset allocation and only 10% based on manager selection. So one thing I think you all should feel good about is that that's what the committee spends its time on, is, you know, working on asset allocation targets and long-term forecasting and not getting caught up in you know, quibbling about this manager versus that manager, or even worse, talking about individual securities. I've been on those committees before, and it's kind of unbearable. But this committee really is focused on the long term. And then just kind of continuing with that for one second, I think the other thing that is worth saying is that we really do have an outstanding committee right now. Not that it hasn't always been good, but it's a very strong committee. If you look at page 19, you can see Lucia is the chair of the committee. She's a portfolio manager with Walden Asset Management. Rob Friedman has been with the Mutual Series of Funds. It's now part of Templeton, managing $20 billion in equities. Kathleen Gaffney is the most recent addition to the committee. She was with Loomis Sayles and now is with Eaton Vance, and is really one of the top fixed income portfolio managers in the country. John LaPan is the founder and chair of Federal Street Advisors. It's a top investment consulting firm. David Stewart is an academic. He's taught college in finance. And then Larry and myself. And then the SRI committee is equally as strong with great professionals. So the oversight is terrific, and we just did a very serious review of our investment consulting relationship with NEPC and decided on review that they are well-aligned to give us excellent service. We talked to a bunch of other firms, and they really did come out on top. So we feel like the structure here is very good.
Yes, they were clearly clearly superior from an overall perspective and from their ESG SRI capabilities. So very well aligned with our needs, and we do have a very strong team from the investment consultant. It's the committee's responsibility to use the consultant to bring forward what the committee feels is most appropriate, and to hear any and all recommendations from the consultant, but to make independent decisions, which I'm very comfortable that the committee has done and will continue to do. And I would, if anybody is willing to, so I threw out that, 20 to 25% of the budget was supported by the Common Endowment Fund. I'm wondering, is anybody on the line able to comment on whether their congregation or organization sources significantly more or significantly less than that percentage of their operating budget?
Joan Paddy in San Diego, significantly less. But we only started in 1990 or something. We're not like a New England church that's had endowment building for generations.
Okay. Thank you, Joan.
Thomas Jefferson, we're on the low side too, probably less than 5%.
Okay. And where's your congregation?
In Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
This is Richard Pratt. We are not presently in the fund, but we are considering it, and I am one of several trustees on the Unitarian Church of Charlotte's Memorial Endowment Trust. And the church, I don't believe, has any money with the fund, but the endowment is thinking of moving its funds there. We used to pay about two-thirds of our net income to the church, but it was just a couple of percentage points of the church budget, pretty small, and we've changed our endowment so that now we just make grants to church-related teams or groups for kind of seed money for new initiatives at the church, so that we are no longer contributing to the church budget.
Thank you. That's very interesting.
Go ahead. Okay, I realize that we actually have not given David any time. David, who chairs the Socially Responsible Investing Committee, David, did you have any comments you wanted to make?
Sure. With regard to SRI, there's been some activity since the last meeting. Last time I did mention that there were videos that had been made, and there 7 of them have been completed editing-wise and are up on the website right now. It's the top item on the UUCEF news blog section on the UUCEF.org. So if you follow that, you'll be able to find those videos. It's also, if you look on the right-hand side of the upper part of the navigation bar at the top, you'll see SRI member videos at the bottom of the Social Responsible Investing tab at the top. Other items include the Climate Change Toolkit that one of our SRI committee members was very involved in creating. So you should definitely check that out. It's a climate change toolkit directly aimed at fiduciaries, so this audience here would find that a very interesting and useful thing to take a look at and possibly read. And one other item of news, the UUA signed on to a biotechnology letter to a number of government organizations to try to influence the regulatory bodies to consider basically to hopefully bring them into alignment with our ethical eating principles. So we signed up on that letter with 23 other investors, and it kind of underlines the importance of working with our coalition partners to try to affect change. And so probably during last quarter, that's the majority of the activity on the SRI side of it. If anyone has any questions, though, I'm happy to try to address those as well. And upcoming, there will be additional videos to come. I'm not sure how many are left, but there are a few more left to come.
And what are those videos about, David?
Various things. Basically, how the committee members view both their impact in SRI as well as the importance of the SRI committee for the UA, how SRI has created justice, descriptions of how we view ourselves and our accomplishments. So it's quite sort of a biography, if you will, of kind of the SRI committee and what how we view ourselves and how we view the importance of what we do, that sort of thing.
So I think that's about it. I have 3:30, or actually 3:29. So let me just thank very much Lucia and David for being on the call and your participation, your great work overseeing our Common Endowment Fund. Thanks to everybody for being on the call. If you do have further questions, no need to wait till the next call. Just contact me, tbrennan@uua.org or treasurer@uua.org, or give us a call. The contact information is on the website. And lastly, let me just wish everybody a great Thanksgiving. I hope you all have wonderful family time and have a great holiday. So thanks to everybody.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you all.